You're listening to Midlife Side Quest, the over-the-hill gaming podcast. Here's your host, John Wall.
It's January 1st, 2026. Happy New Year to everybody, and welcome to episode 163 of Midlife Side Quest, the over-the-hill video game podcast. I am your host, John Wall, and every Thursday morning I bring you 15 minutes of video game impressions, industry news, and tales of a Gen X geek. Thank you for tuning into the program. On today's show, it is part one of our two-part Game of the Year 2025 Spectacular. Today I'm going to be revealing my picks for number 10 through number 6, and then tomorrow on another new episode, I'll be counting down my top 5 games of the year. I hope you all had a very nice holiday. Mine was a little bit all over the place. As someone who really loves Christmas, but also suffers from a bit of anxiety, my brain can sometimes feel like it's bouncing around in a pinball machine this time of year. But we made it through. It was a lot of fun. Last Christmas before we send our son off to college in the fall. So yeah, it was a kind of an emotional one, too. It's wild how fast time's gone. Before you know it, my wife and I are going to be empty nesters. It's bonkers. Anyway, 2026 is here, and I think it's going to be a pretty awesome year. Before we jump into the top 10 games of the year, I just wanted to quickly share some of my favorite other things from 2025. My spare time is increasingly limited, so I don't see anywhere near as many films as I once did, especially in theaters, but I do still try to check out a few movies throughout the year. Sinners was pretty fantastic. Just a great setting and vibe for a horror story with really good performances and direction and music. Definitely very high on my list. Fantastic Four, First Steps was my favorite superhero movie of the year. They actually managed to make it feel fairly fresh, even though this is, what, the like third reboot of the franchise. And let's be real, K-pop Demon Hunters, it's just such a good time. Endlessly fun and rewatchable. All right, here we go. My favorite games of 2025. I think I played somewhere like around 35 new releases or so this year. Lots of really good games to talk about. Like I said, today I'll be counting down from number 10 to number 6. And then tomorrow I'll be going through the top 5 list. So let's kick things off with a little help from my daughter, Sam.
Game of the Year. Number 10.
Well done, Sam. So in the number 10 spot is a title from developer Teary Hand Studio and published by Kodansha. Yes, I said that correctly. We're off to a good start. End Roger is a narrative adventure game that places you in the role of Sophia, a woman living with dementia. As the game begins, Sophia wakes up, goes downstairs, and finds a strange man that she doesn't know in her house. The man seems to know her, though, and helps her to get ready for her day. What really makes End Roger stand out is that instead of just being a visual novel kind of game, which tells this emotionally heavy story, they really convey the fear and frustration of this disease through the gameplay. The game asks you to complete seemingly simple tasks like eating breakfast or brushing your teeth. But like people living with dementia, doing these things is harder than it seemingly should be, and it's frustrating that you don't know why. In the game, you know, you'll press the button that the game asks of you, but it's not working, and then the button moves to a different place on the screen, and then there's two buttons. Well, which one are you supposed to push? The way that they are able to make you feel, even in some small way, the way that Sophia must feel, it's actually, I found it upsetting, you know? It messes with you a bit. I've said before that what I look for in a game is an experience that makes you feel something, whatever that is. I want to feel strong emotions when playing a game. And as someone who, you know, I've seen family members suffer through dementia, and I've got real fears about getting it myself. I definitely felt something. It's a really powerful experience, and I had to include it on my list.
Number 9.
Next on my list is a game that I really didn't think I would get so hooked on, from Slow Clap and Kepler Interactive. Rematch takes the game of soccer, or football for everybody else in the world, and condenses it into a fast-paced, easy-to-learn multiplayer experience that is just as easy to jump into solo as it is with a bunch of friends. So you can do 3v3, 4v4, or 5v5 matches. And for someone like me who doesn't know a ton about the rules of soccer, what I love is that the game strips out pretty much all of that stuff to keep things moving quickly. You know, there's no fouls, there's no time stoppage, no out of bounds. You just keep running until the clock stops. And for someone like me who doesn't, you know, I don't like gathering friends, you know, for a multiplayer game or getting on voice chat with a bunch of strangers, they give you some easy to use simple button prompts to do things like call for a pass or cheer on your team. It's easy and intuitive to communicate on the fly. Now, you will get the occasional person on your team who refuses to pass the ball, or, you know, gets rotated into the goalie position and immediately just runs out of the net to try and, you know, get the ball himself. But the matches are so short that even when you get a couple of dingbats on your team, it's not that big of a deal, because in 5 minutes, you know, you're going to have a brand new squad. Really, though, it's super fun to play. It controls great. It's got a nice Rocket League kind of style to it, with dynamic and colorful arenas. And the thrill of someone passing you the ball and you doing this jumping overhead kick into the corner of the net is just one of the coolest feelings I had in gaming all year. I could totally see Rematch making a regular appearance in my gaming schedule for a long time.
Number 8.
Next, we've got Donkey Kong Bonanza, developed and published by Nintendo. One of the two big launch window games for the Switch 2, DK Bonanza, was developed by the same team at Nintendo behind Super Mario Odyssey, which, you know, I absolutely love. So I had pretty high hopes for this one, and I think for the most part it lived up to those expectations. In this new title, Donkey Kong and Pauline team up to take down Void Kong, an evil mining executive who's drilling down to the planet's core to reach the Banandium Root, a magical item that grants people wishes. And, you know, the story's fine. It's good. It's entertaining, and it delivers the kind of classic Nintendo weirdness, but it's really just window dressing for what everybody is here for, and that's smashing stuff. not since, you know, Red Faction or Just Cause has destroying absolutely everything in sight been so entertaining. DK can punch his way through just about any surface, tunneling or turning levels rather into Swiss cheese. He can rip out a chunk of wall and beat up bad guys with it, or break up the floor and use a slab to surf across the water. Being able to destroy the world this way creates a really fun sandbox approach to the gameplay and lets you, you know, mess around with how you want to tackle different objectives. You know, did the Switch 2 have as strong of a lineup as the original Switch? No, not at all. But Mario Odyssey and Breath of the Wild was always going to be an impossible act to follow, but that that shouldn't take away from how much fun Donkey Kong Bonanza is. It is still a really, really good action platformer and a must play for new Switch 2 owners.
Number 7.
In the number 7 spot is one of the last games that I played in 2025, and one that I ended up enjoying more than I thought I would. From Sucker Punch Productions and Sony Interactive Entertainment, Ghost of Yotai is the follow-up to 2020's fantastic Ghost of Tsushima, but it jumps ahead in time and features a brand new protagonist, Atsu, played by Erika Ishii, who I found to be really, really interesting and likable in the role. You know, on paper, it maybe isn't the most innovative or remarkable sounding game. It plays, you know, pretty similar to the last game, and the story is weirdly similar to the one in another game from earlier this year, Assassin's Creed Shadows. But it is executed at such a high level that it equals much more than the sum of its parts. The combat is still really top-notch and flows so well. Slicing down an enemy, then picking up his dagger and throwing it 20 feet into another guy before slashing the throat of the last thug all in one swift movement. You just feel like such a badass in this game. And it's gorgeous. It's really stunning. The world of Northern Japan with its lush forests, sweeping fields, and towering mountains. It's just beautifully crafted. The attention to detail is amazing, and most importantly, I just really liked the characters. Atsu is really interesting as a woman who is struggling with the lure of vengeance against the people who murdered her family, and the realization that her violent pursuit may kill her and hurt all of those people around her that she loves. And the supporting cast is all great, too. Just a really good story and not too drawn out. I finished this game in, like, about 30 hours, which was really refreshing for an open-world game.
Number 6.
And the last game for today's episode in the number 6 spot on my list is Keeper from Double Fine and Xbox Game Studios. Keeper is a game that absolutely excels at setting a mood. It has vibes for days. Told completely without any spoken dialogue or text, it tells the story of a lighthouse who comes to life, sprouts legs, and goes on a journey through a colorful and creative world with a bird companion who took refuge on top of him. The entire game feels like a whimsical storybook with environments that look hand-painted and a world that is constantly surprising and exciting to discover. It also has some interesting gameplay twists. You know, you start out mostly just kind of walking through the world and doing some light puzzle solving using your spotlight. But the game shakes things up a couple of times with changes to how it plays in fun and creative ways. Double Fine has really established themselves in recent years as one of my favorite studios. Always willing to take creative risks and trust the vision of their developers. And the rewards are games that are always interesting and usually pretty dang entertaining. All video games are art. You know, they're a collective representation of a team's creative vision, but Keeper, man, is the kind of game that deserves to be hanging in the Louvre. And that's why it is my number 6 game of 2025. So, as we put 2025 in the rearview mirror, I also thought it would be fun to share some statistics about the show itself from the past year. I am so grateful and appreciative to everybody who listens to this program. Even after doing this for over 10 years now, it still brings me so much joy every single time I get a nice comment or a review. Just knowing that there are folks out there who enjoy this show, it really, really means the world to me. And with all that support, I like to share some of the progress and highlights from the year. And 2025 was a pretty good year for the show. We had our fun Halloween episodes when I stayed at the Haunted Stanley Hotel in Colorado. We once again collaborated with Turtle Beach for a fun giveaway. And the numbers for the show were encouraging this year. You know, 3 years in, and the show continues to grow. The number one episode was our show on Eternal Strands, followed by the episodes on If Found and Indiana Jones and the Order of Giants. And looking at the year as a whole, the number of listens in 2025 was up 77% when compared to 2024. So it was a really solid year. And again, thank you so much to all of you for making that happen. Thank you for listening to Midlife Side Quest. I appreciate you making time in your day to hang out with me. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow for part two of Game of the Year 2025. What will be number one? You'll have to wait and see. Until next time, I'm John Wall. Stay strong and save often.